Kathy, can you start the recording? Thank you. Okay, good morning. My name is Atif Aziz. I am the Rules Coordinator with the Interpretations and Technical Advice Division of the Department of Revenue. I will be filling in for Michael Wong as the facilitator for this public hearing. It is 10 a.m. on October 27th, 2023. Thank you for taking the time to attend this hearing and to provide us feedback. Please note that we are best able to consider your comments if you provide them to us in writing, which can be sent to the drafter, Michael Wong, at michaelhw@dor.wa.gov, or to me at atifa@dor.wa.gov. That's A as in apple, T as in towel, I as in Isaac, F as in Frank, A as in apple, at dor.wa.gov. We will now begin the scheduled public hearing for Washington Administrative Code Section 458-20-301, or Rule 301, titled Capital Gains Excise Tax, Definitions, Deductions, Exemptions, and Allocation of Gains and Losses. Electronic copies of this rule are available. If you did not receive a copy, please contact Kathy Holder at kathyh@dor.wa.gov if you would like a copy of the rule draft. The draft is also posted on the department's website. Other persons from the department present for this hearing include Tim Jenrich in his role as assistant director and Kathy Holder, management analyst, who is monitoring our recording of this hearing this morning. We are conducting this hearing electronically through Zoom and through telephone. We do not have any parties physically present for this hearing. This public hearing is being conducted pursuant to the provisions of Chapter 34.05 of the Revised Code of Washington, also known as the Administrative Procedure Act. The purpose of this hearing is to solicit comments from the public on the proposed Rule 301. This hearing was announced through publication in the Washington State Register as WSR 23-19-070, which was filed with the Code Reviser on September 18th, 2023. We will consider any comments received pertaining to the proposed rule draft. We appreciate receiving written comments and will evaluate all comments as we proceed with the rulemaking process. We request that you send written comments no later than Tuesday, October 31. And this way, the department can fully consider your comments before proceeding. The purpose of this public hearing is to gather feedback on the proposed language for Rule 301. If you have general questions about capital gains excise tax or need individualized guidance about the application of the tax to your facts, please use our taxpayer letter ruling portal at dor.wa.gov/contact/request-tax-ruling. Utilization of this portal will allow us to provide you with a detailed response to your specific questions. I will now briefly outline the organization of the proposed rule. Rule 301 has five main parts. Subsection 2 contains definitions and terms. Subsection 3 provides details about calculating the tax imposed. Subsection 4 covers exemptions. Subsection 5 goes over deductions. And subsection 6 discusses allocation of capital gain. I will now go over some of the changes made to the rule from the discussion draft shared in June. We have a slide here that goes over these changes. Kathy, would you mind sharing that slide? Okay, so the first change I want to mention is the change to the domicile definition. In subsection 2, we moved the factors and presumptions that were previously in the definition to subsection 6 on allocation. We also provided clarification regarding how the listed factors are applied and added some language about an option to obtain a letter ruling if you have questions about domicile. We revised the grantor trust definition. It now states that the grantor of an incomplete gift is taxable to the extent of the grantor's gift to the trust, to the, sorry, to the extent that the grantor's gift to the trust is incomplete. This is for non-grantor trusts. We revised the principally directed or managed definition to remove the reference to high-level officers. We added some information about capital loss carryforwards. So we to eliminate confusion, we added to subsection 3A a sentence from a statute to specifically state that capital loss carryforwards are included in the capital calculation of the of an individual's adjusted capital gain. Sorry, to the extent that they're included in adjusted capital gain, they're included in calculation of Washington capital gains. And we added examples 5 through 7 to illustrate the application of loss carryforwards in the context of the capital gains tax. In subsection 3A, two little I, on sale or exchange, we updated to reflect that the capital gains excise tax generally only applies to capital gain from a sale or exchange. This was an area that we asked for public comment on the CR 101 stage. We also added a statement that Section 1256 contracts and the taxation of those contracts will be addressed in separate guidance. In subsection 3B, we clarified that beneficiaries of estates and non-grantor trusts are not subject to capital gains tax on a pass-through basis, but may be subject to tax on distributions of capital gains. In subsection 3B, in example 8, we modified the example to address the tax treatment of undistributed long-term capital gain of a mutual fund. And in subsection 4, we added example 12 to show how the real estate exemption applies to a sale of real estate by a pass-through entity. I think that covers the most substantive parts of the rule changes from the last draft that we shared. So at this time, we'd like to hear any comments that you have. If you would like to provide a comment, please use the raise hand feature on Zoom. After I call your name for the record, please identify yourself and who you are representing before providing your comments. And for those on the phone, I will ask if you have any comments at the end. Remember, as I mentioned earlier, we are best able to consider your comments in the rulemaking process if you provide them to us in writing. Okay, so if there are any comments, it looks like we have Michael Brown raise his hand.
Yes, Atif. I appreciate this hearing. Got a number of questions, and you know, I'll put them all in writing, but I just want to kind of briefly kind of go into them. You know, in the Washington capital gains treatment for a Section 1244 ordinary stock loss. Currently, it's ordinary for federal, but long term for Washington. Is that correct?
1244. I'm not. I don't have the answer off the top of my head. So I would have to look into that further. If you could provide that to us in writing, we can do some
no
more
problem.
Investigation of that.
And how are you going to treat worthless securities?
Again, the rule draft doesn't address that, but we'll look into that. I don't think we've talked about that.
Okay. And then you mentioned that there was separate guidance on Section 1256. Just curious, you know, how are you treating, and is this addressed in the additional guidance? How are you treating mark-to-market gains when there's no underlying sale?
Yeah, there is additional guidance on that. We have it posted on our website. There's an interim guidance statement on it. But in general, I believe it is based on whatever long-term capital gains is reported for federal tax purposes is what is included for Washington capital gains.
Gotcha. Okay. And then, you know, you get into situations with these charitable remainder trusts. They push out gains, say currently, from sales that happened several years ago. I'm wondering how the department will handle that.
Do you mean in terms
the actual transaction predated the effective date of the law?
Yeah, there is a language in the rule draft that talks about transactions that occur before the effective date of the capital gains tax, that those are not subject to the tax, but it sounds like maybe, and we do mention a couple of situations where that might come up, but it sounds like maybe there's another one. Yeah, if you could provide that to us in writing, we can look into that
Sure.
further. Yeah.
Okay. Last question. How is Washington going to treat the qualified small business stock? So far, this is not an add back under the rule, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I would have to look into that further. I think we have gotten that question, but I don't know off the top of my head. We'd have to look
Okay.
into that. But if you
All right.
suggest that's
I'll put
something that
all
we
this
should
in
add to the
writing.
rule, yeah, we can look into that further. Thank
Thank you
you.
very much. Appreciate it.
Sure. Looks like Heather is next.
Hi. I'm looking how to lower my hand. So my question is about donor-advised funds. And I'm looking for clarification. I think it's just a clarification in the rule language. And it has to do with the sentence about if you donate to a donor-advised fund or similar intermediary charitable vehicle, the fund or intermediary must qualify as a qualified organization under RCW 8287-0080. So we're looking for clarification that whether the fund sponsor or the organization that owns a fund is the organization that has to qualify, and not the fund itself, because the fund is not an entity. And that would become kind of a logistical nightmare. So that's the clarification we're seeking.
Okay. Yeah, I do not have the details about the language that you're mentioning. It sounds like maybe there is some clarification that's needed there. If you could, again, if you could, it would be really helpful if you could provide us something, maybe suggested language or some clarification about the issue. We can look into that further.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions or comments? I don't see any other raised hands right now. Okay, looks like Jian Han.
Yes, I don't have a question on the regulation itself, but then we had a few pushback from the taxpayers about the attachment requirement for federal tax, because if we say it's excise tax on capital gain, why is the requirement for whole return copy of federal return should be a requirement? Do you have any comments or any suggestion?
Yeah, I believe that is based on the language of the statute. I'd have to look into it further. I think we have a different rule, a different regulation on the administration. It's 458-20-300, but I believe that is based on the statutory requirements. But if you want to write to me with some more details, and I can provide some more clarification.
Okay.
Stephen Schindler.
Yes, good morning. Thank you again for the hearing. Stephen Schindler, a lawyer, Perkins Coie, but appearing in my personal capacity. I want to follow up on the qualified small business stock question. I too read the statute and the regulation to provide that because gain that is not includable in net federal long-term capital gain is not added back in any respect under the statute or under the current draft regulation. But I've also heard reports that the Department of Revenue has given inconsistent guidance in response to requests for rulings as to the treatment of gain that's excluded as qualified small business stock for federal income tax purposes. And my question is whether the department has considered, has intentionally not addressed and made clear that neither the statute nor the regulation would provide for inclusion for Washington capital gains tax purposes any capital gain that is not included in net federal long-term capital gain, and for which the statute doesn't provide any express adjustment as it does, for example, for opportunity zone investments?
Yeah, I don't think there was any conscious decision to do that. I think, like you mentioned, that the regulation follows the statute, and that Washington capital gains is based on reported federal net long-term capital gains. So that was the approach the rule follows. It sounds like maybe there's some need for specific guidance on the qualified small business stock. So that's something we can look into. But yeah, if you could provide anything in writing where you think we might have provided some inconsistent guidance, we can take a look into that further.
Thank you again.
Looks like we've got Joseph Haberzettel.
Yeah, Haberzettel. I'm with Clark Neuber, but I am here in my personal capacity today, and these comments or viewpoints are my own, not the firm's. I guess the one thing I would like to comment on, and I think the department's really done a good job overall with this regulation, but the one thing I do want to comment on is in subsection, I believe it's 6C, too little I, the presumption of domicile for the whole year, where it says for allocation purposes, if you are a Washington domiciliary anytime during a particular year, the department will presume that you're a Washington domiciliary at the time you sold or exchanged any personal property during the year. I don't see any basis in the statute or statutes for that presumption. And it seems like that really is a substantive change from what's in the statute. So I feel like that should not be in the regulation. I just don't see any basis for it. And I feel like, even though it's presumably a rebuttable presumption that a taxpayer could overcome with the right facts, I think that the audit division on audit would really be unlikely to be convinced that that presumption has been overcome. So I think it's really something that would be applied in a lot of cases, where if the regulation is just silent on that, and the department looked at all the facts and circumstances as to when a taxpayer acquired a new domicile, it would lead to a more proper outcome. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I think we can look into that further. I think in general, domicile is intended to follow, I guess, the established law. Domicile is pretty common concept, but we'll look into that some more.
Yeah, exactly. But a person's domicile can change at any time on the appropriate facts. It's not going to necessarily happen on January 1st every year. And I think that presumption maybe creates an expectation that you would look to, look back rather than looking at when the facts established that an actual domicile occurred or change in domicile occurred.
Okay. Yeah, we will look into that. If you could, again, we'd appreciate if you could provide any writing on some more details on that, but yes, we'll look into it further. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just going to give it a minute if anyone else has any comments. Looks like Stephen Schindler.
I beg your pardon, Stephen Schindler again, still in my individual capacity. I've just note that I submitted written comments to the extent to the point that Mr. Haberzettel just made, and would reiterate the point that I think it's the presumption's unfounded in law. I've not found any basis for it And in fact, I think it could be at odds with what is clear, that there's a presumption that domicile persists until shown to be changed by the party asserting a change in domicile, which could happen at any moment in the year and rarely occurs at the strike of midnight on New Year's Eve. I have a question about the 1256 guidance, and it is that how the department grappled with the statutory definition of the Washington capital gains tax applying to the sale of a long-term capital asset, which is expressly defined in the statute, with the fact that in under federal income tax law under 1256, there could be sales of futures contracts held for less than 1 year that are deemed to be long-term capital gain. And I recognize that the statute generally has a formula for starting with federal net long-term capital gain, which there's not an adjustment for 1256 gain characterized as long-term, even if the gain is derived from the sale of an asset held for less than a year. How the department decided to, or at least the proposed rule reflects the federal tax treatment, even though inconsistent with the statutory definition of the Washington capital gains tax applicable only to the sales of long-term capital assets. Thank you.
Yeah, 1256 is one area we identify that has some very unique circumstances around it. Got a grouping of long-term and short-term assets, long-term and short-term gain, and the way it's reported on the federal return is just reported as one one group. So we felt that it would be better addressed through separate guidance. So we have that posted as interim guidance. If you have feedback on that, we could look at that as well. I think it relies most basically on the fact that the Washington capital gains is based on the federal net long-term capital gain reported for federal tax purposes. And so that is kind of the approach we're following for 1256 contracts. And like I mentioned, it's pretty unique situation. And that's sort of why we had to address that separately and not in the rule. Just give it another minute in case anyone else has any comments. Looks like Emily Shea.
Yeah, sorry, I'm remote right now as well, or offline, but I just wanted quick comment is on example 13, it looks like the calculation of the exempt gain was wrong. On the Third Avenue Tower, it should be 3 million instead of 2 million after calculation. Small note, but just wanted to flag it for you. And this is on behalf of the Association of Washington Business, Emily Shea.
Okay, thank you, Emily. Appreciate that.
No worries.
Okay, any other comments? If not, I'm going to move forward with wrapping up the hearing. Looks like B.
Hi, good morning. B. Nayon, I'm here from the Washington Society of CPAs, and we're going to be submitting some comments, but just one thing, as long as people are throwing out suggestions. We really appreciated the capital loss carryover examples that you included. Those are very instructive. However, in all three of the examples, the taxpayer does not qualify for the capital loss carryover deduction. And one of the suggestions that we're going to point out is that it would really be helpful for the department and for the taxpaying public to have at least one example where the capital loss carry forward is allowable. I think that would be good to distinguish what is and what isn't. Right now, all three examples, the deduction fails. So just wanted to get that into today's discussion. And again, we'll be submitting that in writing as well.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate the feedback. Any other comments? Just going to give it a few more seconds. Okay, I think we'll proceed with wrapping this hearing up. This has been the public hearing for proposed Rule 301 titled Capital Gains, Excise Tax, Definitions, Deductions, Exemptions, and Allocation of Gains and Losses. Based on comments made today or received in writing, additional changes may be made before the final rule is filed for adoption with the Office of the Code Revisor. Unlike today's public hearing, the adoption of a rule is not a public process. It requires only a filing of a notice of adoption. Thank you all for participating in this public hearing. If you are not on the department's rules notification list, did not receive a notice of today's meeting directly from the department, and you want to be kept informed of future rulemaking activities related to this rule, please provide Kathy Holder with your email address. Kathy can be contacted at kathyh@dor.wa.gov. This public hearing is now adjourned. For the record, the time is now 10:29 a.m. Thank you, everyone.